episode.
This is the final episode of The Other Ganges.
That was a weird noise.
Right on cue. Like, it's my moment.
It's my last visit to Salt Spring of 2019. It's early autumn, my favorite season on the West Coast. Brian and I have booked yet another Airbnb nestled in the trees at the top of a hilariously steep and bumpy driveway. Airbnbs have become something of an epidemic here, much as they have on the mainland. It's a change on the heels of many other changes, a rolling tide of reinvention that has washed over Salt Spring with the decades. Change is on my mind. I think that's probably pretty typical territory, given that I've been seeking out stories of immigration and recollections of the island in another time. The conversations I've had have reliably turned philosophical, and I'm fascinated by the deeper perspectives these storytellers have shared, ones they've grown through their time carving out their lives and identities here. Being here in the capacity that I am on this trip drives home that sense of shifting. When I visited Salt Spring as a daughter, connected to other generations by family bonds, I felt a different sense of place and time. Brian and I are two young people, dare I say millennials, political, searching for community with a critical eye, and it's markedly harder to find places to fit in here as this version of myself. I think that's another side of Salt Spring that others in my peer group would agree with. Brian and I drive the island, wander trails, sip coffee in a variety of cafes, and debrief each other on the stories we hear. And, perhaps inevitably, this final trip reveals more hidden context, more layers, than I'd seen before.
The thing is, the more Salt Spring became popular, it was that the advertising that was being done by some of the locals, but also from outside forces as well. At one point, I think it was advertised in the New York Times, and so that brought a whole other type of person to Salt Spring as well, that wanted to build homes here and saw how they found it, and they said, okay, well, this is a nice place to live. I'll build my summer home here, and this is where I want to come to for 6 months out of the year or 3 months out of the year, and I'll go back to wherever I came from for the rest of the year or where my work is, really. So that changed the kind of where you have people coming in only for a short period of time, and that really changed that whole dynamics of Salt Spring as well. And of course, the more people that you get coming over here and building, you need more people that are able to work on the crews to be able to fulfill those wishes of those people. There was also some limitations being put on the development of Salt Spring Island in terms of subdivisions. So we have in the early 70s, when they developed the island with all the subdivisions, and the lots becoming affordable for people to be able to buy and build a home on it, is now the lots are becoming more pricey because of the influx of people that want to move here. Mm-hmm. And the realtor said, well, we should be able to get this kind of money for it. And so the prices of lots, and even for housing, that existing housing became almost out of reach for people to be able to purchase. And and just to jump ahead now it becomes a kind of a critical thing, because from what I understand is that homes have been bought for Airbnb purposes, and that has become a bit of an issue that the Alice Trust in the mandates never really enforced the bylaws that were created. So now they're under pressure to enforce these bylaws. And from reading the local paper in the last couple of weeks, they have now warned 16 or 18 Airbnbs that they have to either comply with either paying higher taxes like they do with a hotel, and because now you become a commercial enterprise, and also have the infrastructure to be able to handle the people that are going to be living in the home. And there's been, over the years, there's been quite a bit of objection from neighborhoods. So people seeing people are just coming and going all the time, so the neighborhood is not becoming a place where people know each other and interact with each other, rather than somebody coming in there with having big parties or whatever, all the problems that comes along with it. So it is an issue. In the very early days, I'm gonna jump back a little bit
Oh,
again
yeah,
as
feel
my
free.
memory comes through. But yeah, there was, as you say, kind of a hippie movement on Salt Spring, and as we would call, there were people living on boards or boats, which is still happening right now. It was a whole different kind of a culture in those days that were living on the boats, and which is almost like, looking back now, it's kind of a fun thing to look back at. In the days there, they were kind of snubbed at for, for living on a boat and just coming into the facilities and the restaurants and washing themselves and sitting there all day, not having a real job. And yeah, so I mean, you go through all these evolutions where, where you think back now, it's just, actually, this wasn't so bad after all, really, you know what I mean? Yeah, so when I did a job for the Ruckel family down at Beaver Point, where the Ruckel Park is named after, that was all their property. When they decided that they would make it as a gift to Salt Spring, but also other people from outside to be able to enjoy. And anyway, I did some work for these people. At their house, which was built in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Yeah, so the Ruckels, I think they had a lot of offers from outside forces, from realtors and so forth, from way beyond Salt Spring Island. They decided they wanted to only sell to the government and create a park and for everybody to enjoy, and which it is today. And it's a beautiful place to go to and visit. But they also insisted that Beaver Point Road would be paved, because it was something that was pretty hard to navigate through with all the potholes. And in those days, the roads, there weren't too many roads that were actually paved on Salt Spring Island. So they had the government of the day was committed then to do the pavement along Beaver Point Road. And so the people could come down there and not wreck their cars or have a hell of a time to navigate through that. Yeah, and also in those days too, they had the BC government had the highways department that now it's all privatized, where they contracted out the private contractors. But in those days, the highways department had probably a crew of about, I would say, probably 10 or 12 people working on full time, and they had three graders that would constantly grade the roads on Salt Spring Island, and to try to keep them as smooth as possible. And of course, after a few rainfalls, it would all turn into potholes again, and so you didn't see too many, new cars on the island. It was always the older. So when you went to Victoria, your car, you really stood out, because it was either full of mud and. But now, with this whole culture of new people moving to Salt Spring, now you see the odd Lamborghini, you see the Porsches, you see the Mercedes, you see the Teslas, and it's quite a becomes quite normal now. It's not something that you'd seen in the early days. I did have a few friends in Victoria when I worked over there that I would go visit the odd time when I first moved to Salt Spring, and they would say, well, from what we hear on Salt Spring Island, everybody on Sundays crawls underneath the cars and fixes their brakes and their and the springs from all the potholes that they have to go through. So it's not like that. What really struck me with the Rockwells is that people like them that have lived here for many years, they open their arms to people visiting Salt Spring, and they said, you know, this place should be enjoyed by everybody that wants to come to Salt Spring, and rightfully so. I've never taken a position that, you know, we should now close the door, and that's been a mentality from a lot of people saying, well, we find this place is a beautiful place, and they expect that place to stay the way they found it, and it's not going to happen that way. It wasn't like that when I first came to Salt with 2,000 people, and although I've been part of the changes of Salt Spring Island in a somewhat of a major way, which I never expected when I first came to Salt Spring at all. Yeah, so there was definitely a mentality, and that reflected, you know, of course, the more people you come to Salt Spring, you need the facilities that were able to handle it as well, and it could be the schools. You know, when I first came, it was only we had a high school, and we had the elementary school in Ganges, and that was about it. And as people started to move to Salt Spring, younger families, they needed to have a place for the kids to go to school. The hospital had to be upgraded. So there was even to the point where there was where a school was desirable from the school board decided, you know, we want to build a school in Fernwood because that's the catchment of an area where a lot of people were living. Mm-hmm. And so they said, well, they had bought the property, and when they were ready to build on it, all of a sudden these newer group of people that came to Salt Spring, kind of odd in a way, but they said, no, we really like to keep our kids in the school in Ganges because it's a neat school, and they'll miss, you know, not going to split up all these friendships, you know, one kids are going to Fernwood and kids are going to, you know, so you have to you get more buses, and you have to, there's going to be a huge amount of cost involved. And so we had this whole group of people, and we were sitting back as a group of young families saying, wait a minute, you know, you're not speaking for me, so we're going to oppose you. Mm-hmm. And eventually that school was being built, and a few years later the Fulford School got built as well, because the amount of people living on South Island, and at one point they actually had not enough space in the school, they had to end up putting portables in place. Now the reverse has happened. We have this more of an aging population that moving to Salt Spring Island, and the younger families that be able to live on Salt Spring Island now are moving off the island and are either commuting back to Salt Spring, or crews are coming up from Duncan and Victoria to work on Salt Spring Island. So it's kind of not really the way I'd like to see it, because having five kids myself, it's difficult for them. Not that they wanted to stay here, but the ones that did want to stay here now are having a much harder time to either find rent. Mm-hmm. I've got a son living here with us. He's 30 years old. He's been trying to find a place to live. He had a place where he was renting that was taken back by the landlord because his daughter had a hard time finding a place. So mm-hmm. He said he's renovated, and so that's what's happening as well. Now the schools are having, the portables are gone, not all the classrooms are being used anymore. Same is happening on the Fulford school as well. And when we see now some of the major jobs coming up, we don't have the people to be able to do the jobs. So now the people are coming from off island, coming to Salt Spring, and taking the paychecks and taking them back to where they live. So my philosophy has always been try to keep as much of the work here local and make it affordable for people to live here so that we can have the schools that will need the teachers, will need staff, the hospital that will need staff, although the hospital I think has increased in size because of the aging population that need more of that type of facility. But yeah, it's a whole shift of what we've grown into, and now it's actually going down again in terms of what people can afford to live here in Salt Spring.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting to hear because I know I remember hearing all the stories about how it was so many like young families coming to settle here and people who are hoping to start a family and stay here, and like hearing that now it's become really hard to actually do that is, I think that also probably really changes the character of the island if it's so hard to stay. But I know my dad told me a story yesterday. We were up by the Ram's Head Center where my dad lived for a long time in that building, like his family lived there, and he was talking about how they sold that property for like so little, and then considering how much the land is worth now, like the change is crazy because it's that's like a big parcel of land, and the fact that the value here, it's kind of it echoes sort of like the crisis that you hear is happening on the mainland with housing too, which is partially why I ended up in Montreal. But it's sad because I know a lot of us would like to come back to where we're from and find a place to live. And people my age and older, like I'm 26 now, we want to be able to have a place to stay and start living our lives and like finding out what we're gonna do. And it'd be great to be able to do that where we're from. But it's a hard thing to have to deal with trying to find, like you said, how hard it is to just find a place to live to begin with, let alone how expensive it is. So yeah, and I think that definitely does change the way that a place like feels to be in and the sort of like the community sense if it's so hard to start, raising kids and having a family here that it feels less like a it's a different kind of community
It
for
is.
sure.
Yeah, it is. You have to learn to make those like adjustments as well, because if you don't, then you might as well move off and go elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a few kids who were trying to stay here, or did most of them end up moving somewhere else, or?
We got a son that lives in Vancouver and works in Vancouver. We have a daughter that lives in Langford. That is actually moving back to Salt Spring, and we're very fortunate that we had a piece of property on the island here that we are developing. It's kind of a mixed commercial residential, so we're
Cool.
able to put a house on it and for her to come back with three kids. So it's kind of exciting for us actually to have the oldest one is 13 and the youngest one is 3 years old, so it's kind of fun to have them close by, although Langford is relatively close by for us as well. But there's another daughter lives on Salt Spring as well that has three almost grown kids. The oldest one is 22 and the youngest one is 18. We have another daughter that lives in Victoria that is ownership in a grocery store. And then our youngest son that lives with us here that works in a business on Salt Spring. That's another interesting part too, is that Salt Spring used to be a big part of logging. And there were several log dumps, as we call them, where the trucks would load their logs into the water and get built up to a big log boom, as they call it, and they would be towed off to the sawmills. And that's no longer happening. That was all taken away by the Alice Trust as to for sure that the shores had to be cleaned up, and rightfully so. I mean, Ganges Harbour used to, at low tides in the summertime, would have a stench to it and not very pleasant. So now you go down to Ganges Harbour and you can stand along the boardwalk and actually look right down to the bottom of the harbor and see the crabs walking around, and it's kind of neat actually. It's so there are definitely some positive changes to by not having the log dumps. But now, of course, what happens is that logging is still happening in a much smaller way, and of course the companies have to try to get the logs off island, and having to rely on the ferry system can plug up the ferries to no end, where you have lineups, especially on the Vesuvius ferry, as far back as Sunset Drive, and you could be standing there waiting for two or three sailing wait. So we pick our times of when they go off island. It's like either the first two sailings in the morning and or later at night, or you know, coming back is never really too much of an issue, but there's weight restrictions on the ferries, mm-hmm. that limits the amount of vehicles. So if you get a logging truck and another gravel truck on there, or larger trucks kind of going leaving the island, then basically the ferry is filled up and you'd be stuck with all these cars, not be able to get off. So I kind of thought maybe that would be limiting the amount of people that want to come to Salsping because of that, but that hasn't stopped anybody from coming here. People are willing to wait and line up to come to Salsping on the Crofton site, on the other side of Vesuvius. If you're to leave Salsping on Saturday morning to do whatever, you'll go up beyond the terminal there, and they'll be lined up right up at the very top of the hill in Crofton. And you would think that people in the neighborhood up there would be getting frustrated. I'm sure they're frustrated with because they're painting lines in front of the driveway saying, do not park here. Because they can't even go home, you know. It's like, yeah, it's not very. So, it has lots of positives to have tourism on the island, but there's some negatives. There's not enough parking, like you said when you came here. Is that trying to find a parking space in town? Mm-mm. It's almost impossible unless you know where to go, right? I mean, as locals, we know not to go right into Ganges because, you know, a few Saturdays ago, not actually last summer, I was at a local business on Fulford Ganges Road, way up on the hill, Slake Lumber, and I was trying to come down. I got caught in the ferry traffic coming into Ganges, and I could just see it was a very slow moving, standing still affair trying to get into Ganges, and I could just vision people coming to Salisbury for the very first time, coming to visit the market, and oh my God, they see the market coming down the hill. Oh, this is great. You know, so now they're trying to find a parking space right in town, not knowing that there's no parking space in town. So maybe some signage would be enough to put them in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, each one of those people that are coming down there is just like, where do we go? Like, you know, we like to enjoy the place, but we don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's happening as well. There was a vote 2 years ago to become a municipality.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it was voted down. It was successful. The people that are the driving force behind it are still very disappointed about it. And still somewhat vocal about it, because now when people make a comment about, you know, it's really busy in town and we can't find a parking spot, of course they'll say, you know, on social media from, well, if we had been a municipality, this would have been a whole different thing, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe so, maybe not. It's like, you know, it's. Also, when I first came to Salisbury, the stores would all be closed except for the pharmacy would be open on Wednesday afternoons. Mm-hmm. So everything was shut down on Wednesday afternoons, 1 o'clock, you know, except for the, like I said, with the pharmacy. So that's another thing that you know, and of course the what they call like the harbor low cost would be just a little. Would be our little store that we would always be able to go to till 9 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Bob Lundell owned that place. So there's, you know, when the stores opened up for Wednesday afternoons, and then became, you know, Sunday was kind of out of the question. And now, of course, when you get the bigger stores coming in, like 50s or any of the other bigger stores that might come in, they'd be open from 7 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night. And so that's a whole different, you're not used to that type of thing. I mean, you're used to when you go to a city, you almost expect that, but when you're on a smaller island, of course, everybody's trying to cater to everybody, right? That's moving here. So you're actually bringing the outside. Again, when you think you come into a whole different type of community, this is what I like, it's still changing around you because all that brings it with you, and it's making the changes that you cannot stop or prevent from happening.
And knocking on the door or ringing your doorbell.
Yep, I have it. I have it.
Cool piece of art.
The bark is so cool, eh?
You might remember that when I first heard from Hans, he had hinted at some very interesting stories about my grandfather, Wilf. When I called Hans initially to long distance introduce myself, he'd mentioned that Wilf was more than just an opinionated member of Salt Spring society. He had been known to be part of the community of island residents that was in favor of the island seceding from Canada entirely. This is wild to me. I had never even considered this as a concept. I laughingly told my father about it, and he in turn told me that he remembered Salt Spring testing out a short-lived regional form of currency. Pioneering spirits, indeed. All this made me curious to see if I could find any other interesting, little-known family history while I was on the island. I think situating yourself amongst the stories you are helping share is pretty crucial. With this in mind, I got in touch with Salt Spring's Archive Society and made a trip to the very modern and beautiful island library to visit the archives during this last visit. When I met with the archivist I had been put in touch with over email, she looked momentarily startled. She brought me into the office and told me she'd done a little preemptive digging based on my surname. And then she produced a yearbook photo from the late 1960s, and it was my turn to be startled. It was my aunt, Maya, with the same haircut I currently have, and with a truly striking family resemblance to me. I've always thought I looked a little more like my mother's side of the family, and I've always known Maya as light-haired, blue-eyed, much more German-looking compared to my pretty ethnically ambiguous self. And yet, seeing her in that photo connected me to this part of my history with a jolt.
Yeah. Oh, Ren, when Holly and I, just a year ago, we went to our friend Debbie's memorial on Salt Spring Island, and we decided, just for the heck of it, we're going to go drive by the Funny Farm. Because, I mean, this was the place we all lived in on Salt Spring for a very memorable time. And you know what was really, really mind-blowing? It hadn't changed a bit. It had the same peeling, dirty white paint on it. It had the same uncut grass, the same big, huge chicken barn in the back, the same fruit and nut trees, the walk, the broken step in the front. It's as if we walked out of that place and nobody ever lived there again, as if it was kept in a time capsule or something. Like, I could not get over it.
I can't believe that it stayed, so untouched.
No other place in my life, and almost anybody's life. You can't go back to where you were born and not see it completely changed. I mean, look at just Langford, this block from 10 years ago when it was such a laid-back, sort of hokey little neighborhood. And now, man, yeah. So there are places on Salt Spring still like that.
Kind of lost the time.
It still just stuns me when I think of driving up and seeing our old Funny Farm looking identical like that. We wanted to buy it at the time, but we thought, I mean, it was so ridiculously expensive. It was, I think it was 14 acres. It had waterfront, it had beautiful soil and whatnot, and it was for sale for $12,000.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Oh my God.
I've said that reckoning with change is a core theme that I see repeated across all my conversations, but there are other things I notice coming up repeatedly as well. Maybe as you listen with your own lived experience as context, you'll notice still others. I'll tell you what I feel. I see strong politics in everyone I speak to, even those who feel that Salt Spring is a politics-free community. Of course, being quote-unquote politics-free is deeply political in itself. Communities here cling to their beliefs and ways of life as tools of identity. They gather together to share common goals, and they build together, and sometimes they build apart. I feel how deeply people here are tied to the land, to its stewardship, to growing up and living a life that interacts deeply with the natural environment. And in this same vein, I feel frustration. Pain and loss echoed in the mentions of species loss, weather change, and industrialization of previously wild spaces. The Green Party holds power on Salt Spring. This is Elizabeth May's home riding. People here still have a sense of wanting to return to a wilder lifestyle, to find it, even if what is left to find is diminished. I think that there are patterns of sameness and otherness here. The island is marked by communities coming together, finding commonalities, and then having to adjust and reckon with new and unfamiliar incomers, time and time again. This story is not unique to the island. This land has history far beyond this small snapshot, and people find themselves in need of building new homes, new identities, new communities in cities all across this country, and outside of it as well. Their stories build our reality, too.
What do you think was the most profound change in your life and in Salt Spring altogether since you've been here?
If you could pick one.
Yeah.
I see it as a continuity, really. Mm-hmm. If change is the profound change, if you like, that it's always happening. As I mentioned, the hippies arrived and disturbed the local hardworking fishermen and so on and so forth who were busy logging off farms and everything else. We arrived and we seem a pretty straight, organized, serious set in many respects compared to them. And since then we've had the people who sold up in Vancouver or Toronto and moved here and wanted to have a swimming pool and a nice library, stuff that suited, that they could interact with.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the money and they didn't mind a little extra on their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be another wave. And who knows? Hopefully it'll be a whole bunch of people from Syria or something like that who will arrive here. And that's one thing, having lived a life that we have lived, where we've traveled and lived and worked in various countries, is that I like people who look different from different cultures. You know, coming back to Canada so many times from where we've been, and it's this dreary whiteness which is really noticeable,
mm-hmm.
the sameness of the culture. Yeah, so I don't have that that caution, that wariness that a lot of people have of people who are different or have different religions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see it that way.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, the change is the change.
Mm.
I think it's a really good way to put it. A very good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all worried about global warming and stuff like that. Well, that's a change.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, we are concerned about our grandchildren. But we know that change has happened in the past. Our lives are so short.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, never mind geological time. We don't have the perspective. I was born in the middle of, in England, in the Second World War. and came to Canada when I was 4 years old. So that gives me a longer perspective than many people. Mm-hmm. It gives me a perspective of having come as a as an immigrant and with my family. But people who, you know, have been here for one or two generations, and we're all immigrants, except maybe the indigenous people, mm-hmm. and they arrived sometime or other too. They've just been here longer. And we all can relate to our environment, to the hills and stuff like that. We all give them names. And it can be a very positive thing, I guess is what I'm saying. If you don't say, well, it can't change because it'll make me uncomfortable. Well, change should make you uncomfortable, and that's a plus.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Has changed a lot, but I mean, because of our business, I had to accept change because that's what we did. We did surveying and subdivisions and different things that was all part of. And you saw it happening, and you can't very well stop change.
There's a lot of like small shops now that you know that specialize in different things.
Mm-hmm.
Just you know, mind-boggling that. They
can
all keep
go
going.
Over.
I mean, I guess that a lot of them do well in the summer when because there's a lot of tourists here.
Mm-hmm.
But in the winter, you know, I think they barely scrape by. But there's so many of them.
And
there's
then,
some
and
I've
then
never
they,
even been into.
Yeah, because they open up and you think, oh, I'll go in there sometime.
Yeah.
And then they close
yeah,
because they
because
have
they can't make
it's sad. It's
yeah,
it's
like
too
specialty
bad.
Shops like handbag shops or
yeah.
you know, things that
because
you're
think
not going to buy a lot of.
And people do. I actually volunteer at the visitor center, and we have people come in. We've had tourists from all over, of course, come in, and some of the people that are thinking of buying over here, and so I've got to the point where I say to them, well, maybe you should just rent a place over the winter, just to make sure it's not going to be as idyllic as it is in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Just see how
mm-hmm.
you are, because
that's
also
a
lot of
yeah.
people don't like relying on the ferries, and the ferries, as you've heard, are getting harder and harder to
okay.
get on,
mm-hmm.
and busier because there's more of us. And more travelers, so things like that that they think, oh, isn't that quaint? Well, actually,
yeah.
it's not always
it's not
quaint.
Some people
it's frustrating.
They do. They move over and then they leave because
yeah.
of the ferries. Or I've known a couple, these two couples who've split. One stayed here and the other one's gone back
yeah.
because they don't like the ferries,
yeah.
or just
the island
feeling
living.
Of having to rely on the ferries. Which for
mm-hmm.
us, it's just such a way of life. We've always done it, so
and
it's
I suppose
just,
people get isolated. They feel isolated too, which
I suppose,
we don't,
yeah,
because
yeah.
we're just used to living
it's
on
just,
an island.
Yeah,
yeah, that's kind of part of the way of life when
yeah.
you're out here.
It is.
It is a little more isolated, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No,
you know, like
especially
no.
now because we have everything really here.
And you know, I'm sure 99% of islanders don't ever want a bridge. You know, we don't
oh.
ever want a bridge.
Well,
I mean, the odd person who probably does, especially people
but then
in
it's
the city.
Not an island. Wouldn't
but
be an
yeah,
island.
It would be overrun.
I don't think they ever.
No,
I hope
they
not.
They talk about it every few years, every
yeah.
10 years or so, don't they?
Yeah.
But somebody suggested again, but I don't think it'll ever happen. Hopefully, no.
That sounds like there's a lot of community dissent whenever that
yes.
kind of thing comes up. So.
Yes, there really
yeah.
is. Yeah, I think most people are against it for sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Is there any sort of like youth resentment against one's parents for like raising them here? Like, do they feel isolated, and then they come back and feel like, oh. Never mind, that resentment was unfounded. You know?
Well, certainly not with our children,
that's good.
I would say. Wouldn't you?
No, yeah,
no.
I agree.
But, maybe some people, I, you know, there's some kids who are just itching to get off the island. Like they used to have a book about the grads, you know. I don't think they put it out this year. I didn't see it. And
right.
Or maybe it was when I was
yes,
away.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I was away then. And then a lot of, you know, there'd be a little blurb under all of them, and a lot of them would be, got to get off the rock. I'm going to the city. I'm going traveling, but I got to get off the rock.
But
and a lot of people feel that. But I don't know if they would actually resent.
Yeah.
As you say, I don't. That doesn't really. seemed like it would be something.
I guess that it was a time when people, young people especially, complained that there wasn't anything to do here.
Yeah, that's
true. And there were a lot of problems. I mean,
yeah.
Was, even when we were going to school, there was a lot of drugs here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of drinking because there wasn't anything else to do. So I guess that part would be hard in some ways for some people, and I've never heard of anyone saying they resent it, but I can see that that might.
I think, you know, a lot of them just probably knew that once they grew up and then they could move on and, you know, go.
If they were able to, but some people didn't have enough money to be able to do that, or their parents couldn't help them, or,
I suppose,
know,
that's true.
That's hard, but somehow or other, I guess if you really want to do it, you will.
Yeah. I think in terms of clash, more what I've been hearing, especially when you think about, you know, over time, not just sort of now, but more of the clash would be almost between the young people who are born here and grow up here, and then the young people who have come from the mainland, kind of dropped everything and were taken in by an idea of what the island could be for them and sort of came over there. Do you sort of have any memory of that kind of
clash?
I know there's the clash or like the differences between, you know, people coming over here. Like I've spoken with a few people who really were kind of caught up in the like leave everything and come to the island, and then when they got here it like wasn't really how they expected.
I
can imagine that.
I can think of a few people in my in school that were like that. Resented their parents for bringing them. I was thinking Janice, she just was someone that I think they were quite well off, as we used to say, and for some reason her parents came over here and she didn't want to be here. So you're right that
that's
and
true.
What
if
am I
they
doing
moved
in this
here,
dump?
Especially as teenagers or something,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
And then they'd feel that they
I had forgotten. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They
that's
couldn't,
true.
You know, go to the movies or go to the whatever it is, you know,
and
bands or whatever.
And they couldn't walk unless you lived in town, and these people lived in the North End. So it was they were stuck.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there may have been a few like that. I don't, as you say, I can remember that one.
And there were families who their children went off island to go to school, whether it was elementary
private
school or private
sometimes.
School.
Yeah, yeah,
which
there was
they
a
still
few,
do.
There was a few who went to private school. That's true.
Yeah,
who were the parents again were well off.
Well,
and they,
the, not
you
all
know,
of them,
but if they felt that our school wasn't good enough, then they
well, they still do
might,
that.
Yeah, they do.
The thing.
I didn't know that still happened.
Yeah, it does. They go over to Duncan.
Wow.
Well,
some people also, we have a 4-day school week here,
and
some
don't
people don't want their kids to have a 4-day. They want the 5-day, whether it's more convenient for the parents because their work maybe, but so they go to Duncan. But then there's kids from Duncan who come here to school too, which is because they want the 4-day week.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know if that's, the only, if that's the only reason, but if you're at the ferry at that time of day, that
you
see,
them
going back and forth.
But,
and
those
but,
are long days for those kids too, the little kids, because they go.
That's true.
Yeah. How are we
but
doing?
Yeah.
For
we're doing good. I know. I'm just taking a peek. Oh, we're okay. We still have a little more time.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the private school thing.
It's very.
Yeah. I can remember that. Yeah, there was a few people who left and went to private school.
So I guess then they got their sort of a different kind of life doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's interesting. I had no idea that that was a practice that was still going
well,
on.
Well, it's because.
We're already at like an hour, which is amazing.
Oh, wow.
I know, time flies.
Does it
so
ever?
I will turn off the recorder soon, but I wanted to sort of finish with one thought. This is, it's kind of unofficially turned into the question that we ask, the closer question.
Sure.
That we ask,
yeah.
Which has been about, so we talked about this a little bit at the beginning, too, about the nature of the culture on the island in the face of change.
Right.
And
right.
So, I'm going to try, I spoke with someone yesterday who put it really well. We asked him, like, you know, what do you, if you could define the culture in the face of, you know, all these changes that the island is facing, what would you say? And he said, he was like, well, you know, in terms of Salt Spring and in terms of everything else, like, the nature of And he said the nature of change is change, and that the thing that is constant here is change.
Yeah.
I thought that was really profound.
Yeah.
On a bigger level, for sure. And it seems like from, you know, what we're talking about too, that kind of is, you know, if there were to be a defining feature of the island, it's being willing to embrace change with that same sense of communitarianism.
Yeah.
You know? So
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it really, yeah, that's really well said, for sure. You know, and I think it's also kind of how we, by virtue of these connections, you know, maybe it's not, it isn't identical to what it was, but nothing ever is. So, but if you try to bring in some of the things that do make a place valued or richer in terms of just any kind of way of life that is trying to be harmonious with each other and nature, and that ultimately we do better and we are better, and you know, and I always think that we are better by trying to be good listeners and but also trying to be sure that we do not lose sight of things that that if we lose them, you know, you don't want to lose them for good, you know, like forests and shorelines and really, really important relationships, you know, and sort of in a holistic sort of way with that. Things do change, but they change, but they stay the same. But we continue on the road to change, but we also kind of have to keep some of the things that make it all worthwhile.
You know, I think back to those days, and I think of the people that I came across, the people that I met, and the things that I learned from them. My experience of working on the island was really quite remarkable, because I worked out at Scott Point Marina during the summertime, and our clients, to a great degree, were very wealthy American and Canadian people who had a lot of money and could afford big boats. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot from them in terms of the value of honesty, the value of integrity, the value of truthfulness. I learned a lot of things from the local people. Like I think of people on the island that some of those people that we were talking about that would hang around the pub, and although they would come across as being rough and very conservative and maybe not very understanding, a lot of them were truly diamonds in the rough.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you could always count on Salt Spring Island people was that they would do whatever they could to help you. God forbid if you ever crossed them. God forbid if you ever did them a dirty, they would never forget it. But boy, if you once you made a friend from Salt Spring in those days, you had a friend for life. And that sort of is a very fond memory that I have. The whole issue of the closeness to nature is a very fond memory that I have. And looking back, I think how interesting it was in my mature years to look back and see that how inevitable it was that Salt Spring Island would change because of the changes in the technology, the changes in transportation and communication, the revolution, if you will, of the cultural changes that were occurring, sort of, no matter what you did on Salt Spring Island, you couldn't have protected it. Protected it, I guess, isn't maybe not the best word, but you couldn't have protected it from the changes that were coming. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to look back and see how all those things fell into place to make the events of the last few decades occur on the island.
Absolutely. I think that's really been a big consideration as I'm talking to people about their the theme of change. And wrestling with change is a really big, and it's a microcosm, I think, of the conversation that we have on a bigger scale. Like what happens on Salt Spring is a really good reflection of conversations that we have, you know, across Canada and probably on a global scale as well. So it's really, really interesting to kind of look at it through this lens.
Yeah, and I have very fond memories, as I indicated, of Salt Spring. The downside of that, it really wasn't a place for young people to grow up. There wasn't much for them to do. There really wasn't much guidance. But that has its virtues as well in terms of becoming, making one more independent, more creative, more thoughtful, and more thankful, I suppose, for opportunities and things that happen as a result of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's wonderful. That's a very nice, I think that's a really good closing thought. Oh, it feels ghostly.
Yeah, it's nice.
Towards the end of our visit to the island, while I'm uncovering my own family history at the archives, Brian has a conversation in a game shop in Ganges that uncovers a whole other set of stories.
Yeah, so a couple of things, interestingly, coming to light late in the game here, but it's good because it's just stuff that I think you only get to hear about when you start really engaging more and spending more time in a place. The big one is this discovery that Brian made today by talking with someone else named Brian. He was in a game shop while I was at the Archive Society, and he met this guy who told him about these efforts that are being made to uncover and reclaim Salt Spring Island's indigenous history. So there is a persistent belief. It was even taught to some people who went to school here in the mid-1900s that Salt Spring was not inhabited by any indigenous groups at the time that it was being colonized or preempted, and that it was just kind of like here, that it was a hunting ground for indigenous communities, and that it was like maybe a site of some historic battles, but no one actually was living here, which, I mean, like, when you think about it critically, seems fishy, but that's what people were taught. But they have found, apparently, recently, evidence of longhouse foundational materials down by the bay, which would indicate that there were permanent settlements here. And so there's a group of people with indigenous heritage and without who are seeking to uncover what actually happened here before the preemption times, who was living here and what happened, basically how Salt Spring came to be the way it was today from before when the preemptions were happening. Now this is like, this is humongous. Like, that's a huge, hugely important story, and it ties into so much more of how we treat our history here. And it's really, I think it's really important to cover. We just found this out, and I definitely want to get more information about this and talk to more people, because that's like, this is really, really important. It's been important all along to keep in context the indigenous history that forms the foundation and still is very, very important in today's storytelling, you know, in this country and in other countries. We have a huge problem and a giant history of erasure of indigenous stories, and this one sounds like it really needs to be told.
As this trip and this project ends, we're left with an opening to so much more. I spent a year visiting the island, and I feel that I've only just begun to truly uncover the tales that make up the bones of Salt Spring history.
And the other thing that I keep hearing, this is kind of weird, I've heard this a couple times, I even heard this, so there's this rumor, I don't know if it's a rumor or if it's real, people keep asking me about this murder that apparently happened in Musgrave Landing on Salt Spring Island, which was like a hippie encampment for a while. There's a Tibetan monastery up there. It's a very interesting place, but there was apparently a murder that happened up there. We actually stayed in Musgrave Landing one of those times we were here, Brian and I. And I heard about this from a couple people who were on the island, and I also heard about this, weirdly enough, while I was on my own road trip on Prince Edward Island. I met someone who I mentioned that I was doing some work on Salt Spring, and he immediately was like, oh, is it about the murder? I was like, what is this murder? I'm so curious.
I think that's as it should be. A good story tends to lead to other good stories and leaves you ready to learn more. This has just been an introductory point. To assume that one foray into a community, one set of conversations, a few visits back and forth would paint a satisfactory picture would be pretty irresponsible.
That was a good frolic.
So where do we go from here? For me, I know I'll have much more work to do here to keep learning. I've become more grounded in my family history, and the stories I've been told have shaped my knowledge and perspective on this community and on community in general. Now I'll read, write, and record more in this vein and see what I can discover, what I can share, and what I can give back. As for you, what you choose to do with what you hear is your own adventure. Will you take these stories as they are? Will they influence your own? That's one of the great joys of stories. What they mean to you is your choice alone. Thank you for taking these journeys with me. Maybe one day we'll tell some tales together.
You can go to Moby's, you can maybe even go a little further and go to like to Fernwood or Vesuvius.
Yeah.
Because I mean, further, it's all like a 20-minute drive tops,
yes.
Right? So.
Just so nice.
I love it.
And people live here, they're like, oh, I wouldn't go to the other side of the island. And I'm like,
okay.
Okay.
I mean, I'm here from Montreal.